It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Mr. President, you told me during one of the debates that you would bring back waterboarding
and
a lot worse.
I would do what I would do. I want to keep our country safe. I want to keep our country safe.
What does that mean?
When they're shooting, when they're chopping off the heads of our people and other people, when they're chopping off the heads of people because they happen to be a Christian in the Middle East, when ISIS is doing things that nobody has ever heard of since medieval times, would I feel strongly about waterboarding? As far as I'm concerned, we have to fight fire with fire. But I have spoken as recently as 24 hours ago with people at the highest level of intelligence, and I asked them the question, does it work? Does torture work? And the answer was yes, absolutely. I will rely on Pompeo and Mattis and my group. And if they don't want to do, that's fine. If they do want to do, then I will work toward that end. I want to do everything within the bounds of what you're allowed to do legally. But do I feel it works? Absolutely, I feel it works.
So you'd be okay with it as president?
I will rely on General Mattis, and I'm going to rely on those two people and others. And if they don't want to do it, it's 100% okay with me. Do I think it works? Absolutely.
Wow. Well, can we say that President Trump has started off with a bang? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. You know the way the game usually is played? The Washington Central Media, like the Washington Post, the New York Times, all of the voices, the people at the press briefings, they create an impression. They create a mood. They create a narrative. And they certainly did that on waterboarding. And it's eventually intimidated George W. Bush on it, too, because there's such fear at being, oh, no, I'm not for waterboarding. There's such fear. The narrative is created, whether it's you are Islamophobic, you are homophobic, you are you want torture, you fill in the blank. And they create this fear, and they throw these questions out to try to shame people to back down from positions that actually make a lot of sense. And how refreshing it is to hear someone like Donald Trump say, yes, waterboarding. They're beheading. They're doing unbelievable things to people. And I might add, I know I'll get some email on this, and that's okay. Don't mind. You know, I've never been one to back down from controversy myself. But waterboarding was actually practiced on our troops to prepare them for what they were going to face. It's not like we would do that if it were not a method that was, it's not fatal. It's horrible, I guess, and it gets people to talk. But I just think it's amazing. And there's several things I want to tell you that are really amazing this morning, apart from the headlines that you have heard. Okay, because I'm assuming you're listening to the news. You heard that he signed orders to start the wall, that he's going to limit immigration from several questionable areas, including Syria and other areas of the country. And we'll get into that if I have time. I actually have a lot to talk about this morning, but some things you might not hear. And so that's what I'm going to concentrate on. This is stunning. Okay, this is stunning. This is in my inbox this morning. And the description from my friend who sent it is that the left is going to flip out. So why will they flip out? Because there are two draft orders. It looks that they're going to Donald Trump's desk. We're assuming they're draft orders entitled Auditing and Reducing U.S. Funding of International Organizations. Those criteria, they have to meet criteria if the U.S. is going to fund them. And by the way, this includes the United Nations. Organizations that give full membership to the Palestinian Authority or Palestine Liberation Organization or support programs that fund abortion or any activity that circumvents sanctions against Iran or North Korea. The draft order also calls for terminating funding for any organization that is controlled or substantially influenced by any state that sponsors terrorism or is blamed for the persecution of marginalized groups or any other systematic violation of human rights. The order calls for then enacting at least 40% overall decrease in remaining United States funding toward international organizations. And that, by the way, this article from the New York Times goes on to speculate it might be the Paris Climate Agreement. It might be environmental treaties. Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, that, stay tuned. Stay tuned. It looks like the president intends to remove funding, at least a huge chunk of it, from the United Nations. Now, look, it hasn't happened yet. This is just the drafts are there. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but wow. All I can say is wow. Let me also tell you another wow this morning that I heard. Let me say it this way. You remember that Jay Johnson, 2 weeks before Donald Trump took Jay Johnson as the director, was the director of the Department of Homeland Security. He directed, he wanted to federalize the election system. He called it, he designated it critical infrastructure. We've talked about this, but you may not remember. Critical infrastructure means that the federal government could take over the voting, overseeing the voting in all 50 states. Well, let me first say that all 50 state secretaries of state are urging the Trump administration to rescind this order. And they go on to say that there are a lot of reasons, but that's all I have time to tell you. It's if you want to read about it, it's in the Daily Caller. So all 50 of them, even in Democratic states, are saying, no, we don't want you to federalize the voting system. It's untenable. And we don't want a federal control of our elections. But here's the wow. Here is the wow. Tonight, the Daily Caller broke the story that the Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security has launched a formal investigation into allegations that the Department of Homeland Security launched a series of 10 cyber attacks on the network of Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp, including its election system. You remember that story we told you. Brian Kemp spoke out about it. He said someone had had hacked into their system, and he had traced it back to Homeland Security. And they said, "Oh no, it's a rogue, it's a bad system, it's a glitch, it's what." They just kept coming back with excuses. And now it looks like an investigation is launching because they believe that Department of Homeland Security under Jay Johnson launched 10 cyber attacks. The evidence suggests that Johnson or his subordinates launched the cyber attacks to intimidate Kemp, who was a vocal critic of Johnson's plan to place all state election machinery under federal purview as critical infrastructure. All right, so who knows what'll come from that? You know, as I said to you the last few days, almost everything I'm talking about could take a full hour to discuss, but that's huge. All of those things are huge. Now, another very important thing to me is that tomorrow is the March for Life. I've attended this. I love it. I love it. And I can't think of a better counter to that horrid so-called Women's March last week, where women walked around with their body parts, you know, caricatures of their body parts on their head, said the most vile and vulgar things and claimed that they represented women and screeched and howled and yelled vulgar things to preserve the right to kill their babies. I can't think of anything better to neutralize that kind of poison than to go into the streets of Washington and participate in this march to pray, to celebrate life for the unborn, celebrate life in general, to celebrate families. And so if you were on the edge about, you know, on the fence about coming, I would encourage you to get in your car and come to Washington, D.C., and let's just mute those horrible voices. Let's cleanse the place with the just the word that life matters, that God loves life and unborn babies, and he loves mothers who've made terrible decisions and can redeem. That's the message we want to bring. And by the way, Media Research Center did a little study here. They revealed that the networks ABC, CBS, and NBC have given the 2017 Women's March on Washington 4,518 seconds of coverage compared to 35 seconds for the 2016 March for Life. That is the way it goes. You do know that. Every year, thousands and thousands and thousands of people descend upon Washington. You know, it's been my observation and my husband's observation that the people in the city, many of the workers, the local police, we've seen them treat the March for Life participants who come from all over the country with disdain and disgust. There is a real hostility. I've often said to you, that living in Washington is almost like living in a hostile country. It really is for conservative and Christian causes. Now, that obviously there are exceptions, but that is the overall feel of it. So who cares? Let's descend upon that city and just fill it with the love of Christ and the lifting up of life and with redemption, offering redemption. There'll be women at the foot of the Supreme Court steps. I love, I can't even think of the name, but they stand and tell their stories of how they had abortions and how God has forgiven them. And it is the most beautiful thing, honestly. So if you didn't know what you were going to do tomorrow, I encourage you to drop everything and drive to Washington, D.C. and come join us. And let's just do something in a beautiful way to counter that awful, degrading so-called Women's March last weekend. I want to tell you another aside that you probably won't hear other places, and that is Trump's labor secretary pick. Go figure. It's Andrew Puzder, and he's getting a huge blowback. And you know why? He's, the executive for Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. And Donald Trump wants him to head the Department of Labor. But guess what he did that people hate? He opposes abortion rights. He even wrote the Missouri abortion law that the Supreme Court upheld in its 1989 Webster versus Reproductive Health Services. It was a seminal case that allowed states to impose far more restrictions on abortion care than had previously been permitted under Roe versus Wade, including limits on the use of public funds and facilities for abortion care. So Andrew Puzder is under attack as a nomination for labor secretary because he's pro-life. All the more reason to support him, and hopefully we'll come back to that as well. Now, let's see, I've got 2 minutes left. Let's do this. Anne McElhaney, who has done a movie on Kermit Gosnell, the horrendous abortion provider in Philadelphia, was on with Bill O'Reilly. I want you to hear at least a little bit about what she says. Let's do cut nine.
Now, you actually interviewed Gosnell. He's a monster. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. He's like central casting. It's an extraordinary thing. He sang to me in French.
So he has no remorse about killing all of these babies.
Listen to me, Bill. You know what it's like? Meeting him, it's like he's just played 18 holes of golf and he's come in and he's having a gin and tonic. He smiles all the time. He talks about his big feet. He talks about his hands. And you're looking at his hands thinking, I know what those hands did. He has an extraordinary affect.
Did you ask him why he didn't feel remorse about all these dead
babies? He did nothing wrong.
No?
He did nothing wrong. He's helping the poor women of Pennsylvania. He's providing a service. He's delighted with himself. He thinks he's going to get out. He's going to run a triathlon. He's extraordinary. You know what's disappointing to him, Bill? It's really disappointing he didn't get into the poetry class. This is the kind of stuff that we have
in prison.
The book. In prison.
Yeah.
He went to Auschwitz. He tells us he went to Auschwitz. You know the word he used to describe Auschwitz? And if you ever find anyone in your life to ever describe Auschwitz like this, I challenge you. Impressive. He called it impressive.
Well, he's a monster.
All right, Anne McElhaney, and I want you to hear one more thing that she said with Bill last night. By the way, you should watch that interview, and her book is about Gosnell is moving up the charts after that interview, and the movie, she's still trying to find a producer, but let's listen to her, the media, not wanting to cover Gosnell's cut eight.
Well, the media should have an appetite. This is exactly the kind of story, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. They didn't like what this story tells you about abortion. Didn't like what it tells you about the law in America. That, you know, if these babies had been a couple of inches in a different direction, if they'd been in the womb, it'd be perfectly fine.
In some states, but
in
not
some
in
states.
All states.
Well,
not in Pennsylvania.
Not in Pennsylvania. 24 weeks, though, in Pennsylvania. It's a lot. For
right.
your listeners, you know, 6 months.
Now, you wrote this book. Did you write it because you're a pro-life person, or
no.
did you write it because you were uncovering a grisly crime?
I'm a journalist, and I like the idea of journalism being the voice for the voiceless. And if you can find a more voiceless person than Karnamaya Monger, than Samika Shaw, than the babies who he slaughtered, I welcome it. But, you know, this is exactly what journalism is supposed to be about. It's a privilege to be the person who gets to speak for these.
All right, that's Anne McElhaney. Wonderful. We'll put that interview on our Facebook page, by the way. The March for Life is tomorrow. Come join me. Come join me. Let's march. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Rapid Response Arm of 8 Days of Hope is responding to tornado victims in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. On January 21st, a tornado severely damaged hundreds of homes and killed 4 people. Will you please volunteer to help Hattiesburg residents? Here's 8 Days of Hope director, Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help with Hattiesburg Tornado Relief, please visit 8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this ministry effort. To give, please visit 8daysofhope.com and pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this devastating tornado. 8 Days of Hope is a nonprofit Christian ministry.
First Love, the latest album release from Dennis Jernigan, features some of his earliest songs as well as some new ones. It's a musical return to Dennis Jernigan's first love, Jesus.
You are my first love.
Psalm 32:7 says that he is our hiding place and he will surround us with songs of deliverance. I can't think of a better picture of a relationship than me singing to my God singing to me. And true intimacy is just as simple as this. Lord, here's my heart. Into me, see.
You are my strength when I am weak. You are the treasure that I seek. You are my all in all.
I stand amazed in all of your glory.
First Love by Dennis Jernigan. Available now for a suggested donation of $12.99 at afastore.net.
I stand.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. We're only a few days into the Trump presidency, and he's already managed to dump TPP, engage pro-lifers, rattle Democrats, and discombobulate the mainstream media. I really like this guy. I mean, yesterday, the sheer scope of his immigration policy is just incredible. Cracking down on sanctuary cities, temporarily suspending visas from hotbeds of radical Islam, building a wall. We're going to build a wall, America. I got to be honest with you folks. I was beginning to wonder if the wall was some sort of metaphor. But no, sir, by golly, he plans on building a great, big, larger-than-life Trump wall, putting America first. Imagine that, folks. A Republican president who does what he promised to do on the campaign trail. Never in all my life did I think I would see that day. All I can say is thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for keeping your word. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها الناس إنا خلقناكم من ذكر وأنثى.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That's the melodious voice of Muhammad Majid, who is the imam of the All Dulles Area Muslim Society. He has served as president and vice president of ISNA, which is the Islamic Society of North America. He was supposed to simply do an opening prayer at the National Cathedral with President, newly inaugurated President Trump, and Vice President Pence. Instead, he went off script and recited 2 verses from the Quran, and there's a lot to say about that. But let's just say that Muhammad Majid is deeply connected in the Washington scene. And I have asked Frank Gaffney to join me this morning. You all know Frank. He's the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. You hear him every single morning bringing us incredible information in 60 seconds during his commentary. Frank, good morning, first of all, and it's always nice to have a few minutes with you. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Sandy. Thank you so much, and thank you for the privilege of contributing to your program every day. It really is a delight for me and hopefully helpful for your audience.
Oh, it's a wonderful gift, you know. And so, all right, let's talk about this Mohammed Majid first, because I guess the question has to be asked, Frank. You and I have talked about over and over, you have spent hours and hours and hours writing and speaking about the infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood inside Washington, the Beltway, and the government. We have a new administration, so it's only been a few days. So if you could diagnose or describe the influence of the Muslim Brotherhood right now with the Trump administration coming in, what would that be?
Well, just a word of calibration, Sandy. The Muslim Brotherhood was, as a result of a document that fell into our hands providentially in 2004, exposed as a group that has stealthily, for 50-plus years, been working, in the words of this secret plan, quote, to destroy Western civilization from within by the infidels' hands and the hands of the believers, so that God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. And by that they mean, of course, Allah's religion, unquote. And that really puts in perspective what we're dealing with this entity based in Cairo, Egypt, but now operating worldwide, including through a very large infrastructure in the United States, built, as I say, over five decades. The presence of the Muslim Brotherhood in Washington these days is evident in the myriad front groups that it has established. Some of the best known are the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, which we've published recently a book. And by the way, lots of information on all of this is available at our website, Sandy, for free, for that matter, securefreedom.org. But a book that documents that the federal government proved in court that CARE is actually Hamas, a designated terrorist organization. Another major group is the one you've mentioned. Mohammed Majid was the president of it for some time, the Islamic Society of North America. It's a Muslim Students Association. There's a group called the North American Islamic Trust that builds mosques across the country for the Muslim Brotherhood and Sharia supremacism. So the influence that these groups have was unfortunately somewhat in sharp relief at this national prayer service, where Mohammed Majid was indeed invited. It's part of an interfaith outreach effort, apparently arranged by the Archbishop, the Catholic Archbishop of Washington, to put him in front of the President of the United States and the Vice President and many other dignitaries. And the concern is, of course, that Majid will be able to continue to do what he did enormously successfully during the Barack Obama years, which is to say, to be inside the wire of government and to be exercising influence, perhaps as in the past, inside the Department of Homeland Security by serving on its advisory council and shaping American policy towards, well, you guessed it, the Muslim Brotherhood, among other things. It's a frightening prospect. I hope it won't happen under this administration.
I need to mention, we always talk about this, and I want to mention it again, that Frank's publication, An Explanatory Memorandum, is not, it's a very easy read. It's a very small little booklet. You can get it online at securefreedom.org, but it spells out what Frank is talking about, how we know that the Muslim Brotherhood is here to undermine and to, by stealth jihad, by civilization jihad. It is a shocking story, and I also want to point out that our friend Patrick Poole, after a trip to Egypt a couple of years ago, came back reporting that the people in Egypt, and certainly the leadership and the military, were shocked and stunned that the Muslim Brotherhood is treated with respect and dignity and actually has made inroads, tremendous inroads, into the Republican Party as well. So, Frank, that's a huge problem. It's been a center of your fight in D.C. for a long time. That's my diagnosis anyway. So now we have a new administration, and Donald Trump has said, at least he certainly indicated, that he wants to support this effort to declare the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, and that is sending shockwaves, is it not?
It is. I'm prayerful that he will do it. There's growing pressure coming now from these Muslim Brotherhood front groups, of course, and a lot of their enablers on the left. And Sandy, I would just say one thing about the explanatory memorandum, and thank you for noting that. Again, it's available for free if people want to download it at our site, securefreedom.org. But that was written actually by a top Muslim Brotherhood operative. And what it makes clear is that this sort of stealthy kind of penetration and subversion from within is something that they're actively working inside our country. And what we've learned is they're doing it with help from folks on the left, what we call a red-green axis. And that's what was so troubling during the Obama years. And there's some reason to believe that they're seeking to try to nip in the bud President Trump's efforts to counter what he calls radical Islamic terrorism, which, as you know, in his inaugural address, he vowed to eradicate from the face of the earth, but to sort of wall off from that kind of eradicating effort those who are engaged in this stealthy, subversive, as I say, kind of jihad. In some ways, Sandy, as we've talked about many times, more dangerous, really, even than the violent kind of jihad that we're all familiar with, to a country like ours, which if you profess to be simply practicing a religion, we've been encouraged to give it a pass when, in fact, what you're doing in the case of this Sharia supremacism is subversion, is trying to take down our country, to replace our constitution with a foreign body of law called Sharia. So for all these reasons, I think it's imperative that President Trump designate the Muslim Brotherhood and steel himself against the pressures and the influence operations and even the penetration that I think is aimed at him at the moment.
Yes, in fact, let me ask you this way. Of all the national security appointments that the president has made, who do you think understands this issue the best?
Well, certainly one of the best is Michael Flynn, the national security advisor to the president. I think, candidly, that's partly why he's under such withering attack at the moment. Another man who I know understands it very well is Steve Bannon, the counsel to the president. I believe Kellyanne Conway, another counsel to the president, understands it well. I think that Secretary of Defense Mattis, Secretary of Homeland Security Kelly, the hopefully incipient Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, they've all spoken out about the problems that the Brotherhood represents, and I think will be supportive of the president in designating them, hopefully in the next few days.
All right, and that, you know, and just to put that, to kind of put that in perspective, it's Ted Cruz who introduced that bill, as I understand it. I don't know if there's any other move in Congress besides that. Is there?
Well, there's legislation that's been introduced in both the House and the Senate. Mario Diaz-Balart is the lead sponsor in the House. But the truth of the matter is, Sandy, that the legislation is kind of hortatory, and it's not even really needed. This is a responsibility of the executive branch. The Secretary of State, the Secretary of Treasury basically maintain the lists that such a designation would involve, and I think a word from the president makes it happen. But just going back, if I may, quickly to the point you made at the beginning, what was going on at this prayer service was not just this fellow Muhammad Majid. There was another chap by the name of Sajid Tarar, who was another Muslim. In fact, he was involved with a group called American Muslims for Trump. And he chose to read a passage from the Quran, in fact, the first verse of the Quran, called the Al-Fatiha, which basically condemns Christians and Jews. And it's evidence of both the fact that they've already had people getting inside their wire, troubling individuals, and people who make no secret, if you know what to look for. Sometimes it's in Arabic, and sometimes it's sort of in code. But if you know what to look for, if you understand the teachings of Sharia, if you understand the practice of those who adhere to it and who believe that it is their duty to engage in jihad, to impose it on the world, then you understand that what they're doing is they're signaling both their contempt for us and their determination to force us to submit to them.
Frank, Phil Haney, the Department of Homeland Security whistleblower, has written a really lengthy but very thorough article in Front Page Mag. And by the way, we'll put this on our Facebook page. He's theorizing, because he knows, he spent, 30 years studying this, that actually might have been a signal in the National Cathedral to Islamic supremacists, to Muslim Brotherhood types around the world. And he is suggesting that if Donald Trump should designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, there may be that it might result in something bad. I don't know. How do you feel about that? What do you think they would do? I mean, they are so deeply entrenched. They're entrenched in the Republican Party. So what would that look like if they were designated a terrorist organization?
Well, I think what it looks like is first of all, you stop bringing more Muslim brothers into the United States. Second of all, I think that you reflect that the money that has been provided from offshore to the Muslim Brotherhood in this country, for example, I mentioned the North American Islamic Trust, money that has come in, notably from Saudi Arabia, to fund the acquisition of the mortgages of mosques or the construction of new ones, and thereby essentially take them over. I think that has to stop, obviously. And then there's the question of what is being done by these Brotherhood influence operations. The Council on American Islamic Relations, again, most notably CARE, as it's called. This is Hamas, and we have that little book I mentioned to you, CARE is Hamas, is about the founding meeting of the Muslim Brotherhood's Council on American Islamic Relations organization in 1993 in Philadelphia. And it makes it absolutely clear, Sandy, that its mission was to raise money for Hamas, the Brotherhood's Palestinian franchise, a terrorist organization, and to wage what you might call political warfare inside our country. That's what they've been doing. So my hope would be that the Council on American Islamic Relations and others of these Brotherhood fronts, which, by the way, going back to what you said about the explanatory memorandum, in the back of that little booklet is a roster under the heading Our Organizations, the Organizations of Our Friends.
By their miserable hands.
The first 29 of these groups right there laid out, one of which, by the way, is the Association of Muslim Jurists of America, the group that Phil Haney is talking about in his very important piece. I urge people to read it because it really is a serious indication that these guys are prepared to step up to perhaps even violence in the days ahead.
Yes, and we have a whole, I'll use the word cabal because I can't think of another word, on Capitol Hill in the Congress. We have a serious problem of infiltration. And again, we have it in the Republican Party as well. And because so many of the leaders of the Republican Party are clueless, Frank, about what's really going on, I find that my listeners know more than they know. I think I told you, I sat next to the, I'm going to name names, FBI director out of Chicago on a long flight back and forth from D.C. to Chicago once, and we got into a conversation, and I was shocked at how little he knew about the Muslim Brotherhood.
He's not allowed to know, Sandy. It was the point. It's been a career-ending offense inside our first lines of defense, whether it's the FBI, whether it's the Department of Homeland Security, the military, the intelligence community, to actually know what we've been talking about. And that's why your audience is so much better informed than even senior people in the FBI, because you're telling them the truth every single day. God love you for it. And this is a moment when we've just got to turn this around, because to the extent that what we have in our country, as well as obviously overseas, are people who wish to destroy our nation, we have to address that, and we have to both recognize it for what it is and take, you know, corrective actions. And I think that's what Donald Trump is about to do, hopefully, both with respect to this issue of the Brotherhood designation and more generally dealing with radical Islamic terrorism around the world.
Frank, you are a national treasure and a very good friend, and we appreciate all that you contribute to this show every single day. It's Center for Security Policy. Their website is securefreedom.org. All the information is free. It is really the go-to place for the things that we're talking about. Frank, thanks a lot, and stay safe.
Thank you, Sandy. Bless you.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Hi, this is Kirby Anderson. Every night on Point of View, we look at various issues from a biblical perspective. Our topics range from politics, economics, and foreign policy to the Bible, theology, and apologetics. We talk about the issues of the day and bring authors and inform experts to the program so that you can have a better understanding of what is happening in your world. We talk about anything that affects your faith, your family, or your freedom. Join us weeknights at 10 Central on AFR Talk.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. 159 years ago, President Lincoln quoted the Bible saying, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." 101 years ago, President Teddy Roosevelt declared, "There's no room in this country for hyphenated Americans. The one absolutely certain way of bringing this nation to ruin, of preventing all possibility of it continuing to be a nation at all, would be to permit it to become a tangle of squabbling nationalities." Unquote. After the most divisive administration this country has ever known, we are divided and hyphenated not only by racial classifications as Native American or African American, but also by sexual categories of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, etc. Continued division leads to further brokenness, but there's healing in unity. By God's grace, let the healing begin. Let us be simply known as Americans, no hyphen needed. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has taken another dramatic step to fulfill his promise to the American people. He did so by announcing yesterday that he will begin securing them by enforcing the nation's immigration laws. It's an indictment of the Obama presidency that such a commitment is controversial, to say nothing of shocking. Mr. Trump will be enforcing a 10-year-old statute by building what he calls a wall along the United States' porous southern border. He'll tell Border Patrol officers to enforce the law by holding rather than releasing illegal aliens they apprehend. And he'll penalize, not encourage, violation of federal immigration statutes by so-called sanctuary cities. It's refreshing and a powerful boost to public safety and national security that Mr. Trump is actually honoring his oath of office by upholding and defending the Constitution and the laws of the land. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We mentioned Phil Haney when Frank and I were talking. And by the way, Phil will be our guest tomorrow along with, Trevor Loudon from New Zealand, who tracks the worldwide move of communism and the left. He's just a fascinating guy. He's going to join us too, along with Jim Simpson. So you're going to enjoy it. It's talking about the infiltration by the left into the highest levels and their role in a lot of these marches and demonstrations. And so I think you're going to find it fascinating. But Phil is the one who wrote the article that we were discussing, which is in Front Page Mag, in which he traces the connections between operatives of the Muslim Brotherhood and also then talks about the whatever you want to call it, it's more than a call to prayer, the recitation Muslim brother at the National Cathedral. So I think you'll find that interesting. We will put that on our Facebook page so that you can access it. You know what, too? Adam, let's put the explanatory memorandum on there, too. Probably the half a dozen times I've had Adam post this, but it's that important. So you can understand, when Donald Trump does designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, you will understand why. And maybe you can educate your local law enforcement, since they are not allowed to know. You might want to pass it out. Buy a half dozen. You don't have to buy them. They'll send them to you. Buy them and send it. Give it to your sheriff. Give it to your FBI agent buddy. Give it to, you know, someone. Because they don't know. They don't know because the Muslim Brotherhood has so infiltrated the highest levels of our government that they purge the training manuals for our police, for the FBI, for the Pentagon. It is amazing. And it's been going on now for so many years that, honestly, the younger agents and the younger people serving are clueless. And so are Republican leadership, by the way, I might add. All right. In regard to that, a couple of other things that I think are really important that I didn't get to with Frank, but I want you to know. You remember what the morning that when with 2 hours to go as president of the United States, Barack Obama decided to send $220 million to Palestine. Well, Donald Trump has stopped that. They're not going to do that. They have frozen that out. And so the State Department said it was reviewing the last minute decision by former Secretary of State John Kerry to send the funds to Palestinians despite objections from congressional Republicans. So it's like an in-your-face, another 220. I mean, how much money are we giving? It's just amazing. I mean, is it not refreshing that President Trump is saying, no, we're stopping. The spigot is closing. We are not continuing to give U.S. dollars away to foreign entities who don't meet certain criteria. I told you that in the first segment this morning. It's just amazing what he's planning to do, including, it sounds like, defund at least a huge portion of the United Nations. He talked about NPR, public broadcasting. That's not foreign, of course, but the foreign entities that expedite abortion or embrace it, and also those that have ties to Palestinian terrorism, and on the list goes. It's just amazing. It's amazing. It's breathtaking. When have we ever seen this? We never have. It's like everything in Washington moves so slowly. I've seen it. The bureaucrats, the people that have been here for years, you know, have no expectation. They don't think presidents make that much of a difference. I don't know that we've ever, besides Barack Obama, he made, Ronald Reagan made a huge difference. He came in swinging like Donald Trump. Barack Obama made a huge difference. Oh my goodness, did he ever. Make a huge dent in the radical transformation of the United States. And it's going to take a lot of work to reverse the awful things, really, that he implemented. But here comes Donald Trump. He just might be the one that could do it. We'll see. Here's another story. This is coming out of Scotland, and I think this is interesting. You know, Great Britain is overwhelmed and not careful about their immigration policies. And Germany, too, and France, too. I just read an article this morning that France is becoming, tourists are pulling out because the assaults, the robberies, the crime are just becoming unbearable because they have been so careless about their immigration policies. Oh, they don't have borders, you know, in Europe. And so Germany the same way. But this is in Great Britain. One of the Queen's chaplains has resigned amid a row over a passage of the Quran read out at a Glasgow cathedral, which denies that Jesus is the Son of God. Reverend Canon Gavin Ashenden stepped down as one of the monarch's 33 chaplains in order to have more freedom to speak out on behalf of the faith. Following discussions with Buckingham Palace, the controversy centers on an interfaith service held at St. Mary's Episcopal Cathedral over the Christmas period where a chapter from the Islamic text was read out. The chosen verses tell the story of Christ's birth, but claim he was not the Son of God and should not be worshipped as such. The reading sparked widespread outrage among the Christian community, and Police Scotland is currently investigating a series of abusive messages directed at the cathedral on social media. Speaking to Radio 4's Sunday program, Reverend Ashenden said, "The problem with what happened in Glasgow was that although it was presented as a way of building bridges and a way of educating people, it was done badly in the wrong way, in the wrong place, in the wrong context. There are a number of members of the congregation who have written open letters complaining of the profound upset they experienced as people of the Eucharist community who had come to worship Christ. So to have a reading from the Quran at that point was a fairly serious error for the Christian worshiping community. But to choose the reading they chose doubled the error. Of all the passages you might have read likely to cause offense, that was the most problematic." He announced his resignation on the blog. "After a conversation instigated by officials at Buckingham Palace, I decided the most honorable course is to resign. I've held the position for the last 9 years, but over the last few years, people who objected to my defending the Christian faith in public wrote to both Lambeth Palace and Buckingham. When I was confronted with these attempts to silence or defense, I don't know that word. That must be a British word. Discredit me. My reaction was to ask, in what way is a priest defending the faith on behalf of a monarch who was defender of the faith incongruous or improper? I've come to see that the situation is more complex than that." And so it goes on. I just think that's a really fascinating story. And it took a lot of courage for him to do that, and God bless him. And we need more men like that on both sides of the water and all around the world. People are going to have to take a stand. That's just a great story. All right, so I've mentioned, and I want to mention again, that tomorrow is the March for Life, and I'm hoping that you will join me in D.C. as we march those streets and carry those banners celebrating life, celebrating God himself who created those little babies, who created a man and a woman for the purpose of uniting in marriage, to form families and small units, which would become larger units and form society. And that's what we're going to be celebrating. And in regard, sort of linking to what we talked about with Frank, and I did mention this, but I want to mention it again. The organizer for the D.C. Women's March was Linda Sarsour, who is pro-Sharia law with ties to Hamas. Well, Hamas, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood. And interesting, I'll just give you an idea. I think she's the one who wore a hijab made out of an American flag. And this is what she tweeted recently. "You'll know when you're living under Sharia law if suddenly all of your loans and credit cards become interest-free. Sounds nice, doesn't it?" So she, okay, now, do I need to fill in the blanks there? Yeah, let's see. Your loans and credit cards become interest-free, but you might not be able to go out of the house. You might not be able to go to school. You might be the subject of an honor killing by a brother, a father, an uncle, if you do something they don't like. You might be circumcised so that you can't be active sexually. There might be, but listen, your credit cards might be interest-free. So, hey, what's to worry about? Well, let me just say, there was an interesting article out of Gatestone Institute. And this is, I'll read parts of it here. The Yazidis, you know, are a part of the, in the Middle East, there's a group of people. They're not Muslim, and they are not Christian. They have their own faith, and they are the object, along with Christians, of complete and total persecution by the Islamists. So the point here is that as the Women's March against Trump was being held, Yazidi girls were sold as sex slaves. Some were sold for a few packs of cigarettes, and some of those women and girls have had to watch 7-, 8-, and 9-year-old children bleed to death before their eyes after being raped by ISIS militia multiple times a day. ISIS militias have burned many Yazidi girls alive for refusing to convert. Why? "Because we are not Muslims," Misra Ismail, chairman of the Yazidi Human Rights Organization International, said. "This is genocide against women," Zeynep Kaya Kavus, who is the leading Alevi activist. "Sadly, many of the organizers and participants of the Women's March in Washington chose to ignore women being tortured and exterminated by Islamic terrorists and in other parts of the world, not being able to receive an education or even leave the house without permission of a male. If only these women felt as motivated to protest about the enslavement, rape, and torture of Yazidi women and children as about the cost of tampons." And so those rallies took place. As Miss Judd was talking about her devastating tragedy, that tampons are taxed while Viagra and Rogaine are not. Thousands of Yazidi children and women were being forced into sexual slavery in Iraq and Syria at the hands of the Islamic State. ISIS attacked the Yazidi homeland of Shinga in Iraq in August of 2014. More than 9,000 Yazidis were killed, kidnapped, or sexually enslaved. And on and on and on it goes. And it goes on to claim, and again, this is a publication by Gatestone, to claim that last year the Yazidi Women's Assembly commemorated the third day as the Day of International Action Against Massacres Against Women and Genocide. And then it goes on to say, one wishes that women activists in the U.S. would raise their voices against the genocidal attacks on Yazidi women and children, but they have not. Women's rights groups in the U.S. have not supported the women in Iraq and Syria who really are oppressed, kidnapped, and raped. Some of the participants of the Women's March in Washington claim that Trump will take away their rights, an accusation that many women who suffer under Islamist governments or organizations would find laughable. They are worried about being able to get an abortion, and their concern is justified. This from Gatestone. But it is not Ayatollahs that have come to power in the U.S. Moreover, Trump seems determined to fight radical Islamic terrorism, the greatest threat to the dignity and freedom of women all around the world. That already shows his commitment to liberty, especially liberty for women. Those are really good points, and I wanted to share that with you. We actually should put that on our Facebook page, too. It's from the Gatestone Institute. The title is Yazidi Girls Sold as Sex Slaves While Women March Against Trump. And so it just shows you the absurdity of all of it. All right. Let's see what to tell you in the remaining minutes here. Let's listen to... No, I'm not going to go. We had all kinds of clips that we were going to play for you. You know that Donald Trump did a lot of things yesterday on immigration. I think he's not finished, but it was a good start. Building the wall is going to begin. There's also going to be an investigation into voter fraud, which is making the left apoplectic. Of course, they say there's no voter fraud. There's no what? He's crazy to say there's voter fraud, and yet they fight voter ID tooth and nail, as though maybe... I wonder if they think maybe somebody's voting that doesn't have an American citizenship. Is it possible that that's at the heart of fighting these voter ID laws? And by the way, bureaucrats brought in 500 refugees into the country one day before Trump's expected ban. Bureaucrats at the State Department brought 500 refugees into the country on Tuesday, one day before President Trump is expected to order a multi-month ban on allowing refugees into the U.S. except for religious minorities escaping persecution until more aggressive vetting is in place. He's going to block visas to anyone from Syria, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. And the 266 of the 500 refugees just brought in on Tuesday, 44% came from six of those seven countries. And on it goes. It's an article in Breitbart if you want to follow up on that. And last but not least, George Soros is up to his evil. He's working now with MasterCard to work out a system to profit from immigration. You have to know he's for open borders. He is for tearing down American society and cohesiveness, and now he's going to be working with MasterCard to do that. You might want to rethink any MasterCard that you're using. We'll talk about that at more length later, too. You can Google it and find out more detail. Well, all right, lots of stuff. I hope that you can join us at the march tomorrow. Jump in your cars. Let's meet there. And stay safe on the way. Thank you for listening. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.